Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We're joined, as we have the privilege of being each week, by Bill Gertz, one of the country's preeminent national security reporters and investigative journalists. He is the author of seven best-selling books, including most recently Info War, War and Peace in the Information Age. You can find his writings at the Free Beacon, Washington Free Beacon, where he is senior editor, and his column, the prize-winning Inside the Ring column at the Washington Times. Bill, it's so good to have you back. Welcome. It's been a long time since we've talked. I'm glad to catch up with you.
Hi, Frank. Good to be on the program.
So, Bill, I wanted to start with something you reported on this week, which was General Mattis, the Secretary of Defense, has unveiled his own defense strategy, presumably the complementary Pentagon-oriented version of the national security strategy that President Trump turned loose in the pre-Christmas period. What did you make of it, Bill, and what are the significant changes from the past?
Yes, what we have is the unclassified summary. There's probably a much more in-depth classified version. There is a much more in-depth classified version, which is another feature of the Trump administration. You remember during the campaign, the president was always telling the military that they shouldn't telegraph their punches, such as when they're going to liberate the Iraqi city of Mosul, things like that. So they've taken a more secret approach on the one hand, but the key change in the new defense strategy is a shift from the focus on Islamic terrorism as the main priority to nation-state conflicts, primarily China and Russia, also dealing with belligerent North Korea and definitely Iran. I know that Mattis has been focused with laser-like intensity on the threat from Iran since his days as the Central Command commander. The question will be, with the budget crisis that they've had for so long, will this result in a change in forces? And that means buying new weapons, restructuring forces. The strategy talks about making forces more agile and leaner. In other words, smaller combat units rather than big divisions. They're going to look for brigade task force type sizes and use them to be much more agile and moving. And of course, if you're dealing with China, that means you've got to forward position things. You have to buy more ships. No more of this littoral combat stuff, these weakly protected coastal ships.
Right. I did want to focus in on one area that you've written about recently. We've been discussing on the program a bit the nuclear posture review. There is also a missile defense review that is apparently nearing completion. What are you hearing about it and the priority that it will enjoy?
Yes, I wrote in my Inside the Ring column in the Washington Times this week that the Deputy Defense Secretary, who's kind of shepherding the what's been called the Missile Defense Review, was not happy with a first draft, which seemed to focus more on purchasing existing systems, such as the ground-based interceptors that we have in Alaska and California, along with more naval SM-6s. And the Army's THAAD ground-based systems. The word I'm told from Pentagon officials was that Shanahan looked at this and said, well, this is not really a visionary review looking out to the emerging threats, the key among them being maneuvering warheads, hypersonics, as well as space missiles, which Congress has been prodding the Pentagon to focus more resources on.
Yeah, and necessarily so. Let me ask you, Bill, about one other issue that you've also covered, and that is the recent action of the United States Navy, I should say. The USS Hopper was sent through some of the South China Sea waters within 12 nautical miles of a Chinese manufactured and fortified island in Scarborough Shoal. What was the purpose of that mission, and what are the Chinese claiming they did about it?
Yeah, this is an important story that I wrote about, and it has to do with Chinese military expansionism in the South China Sea, which, again, is being expanded relatively unchecked. The Pentagon has adopted a kind of what I feel is not an adequate approach to the problem, and that is, and again, this was outlined in the defense strategy, which called for strategic predictability, but operational unpredictability. In other words, they're not going to announce when they're going to do these operational freedom of navigation or innocent passage operations. And that is really giving the Chinese the information for warfare advantage. And the Chinese took advantage of that without announcing this recent warship passage by the USS Hopper, a guided missile destroyer near Scarborough Shoal, which is about 150 miles from the Philippines, very strategically located where U.S. forces will be. The Chinese Foreign Ministry announced it and denounced it as a violation of their sovereignty. And there was very little pushback from the Pentagon. They needed to come out and say, these are international waters, and we're going to sail wherever the law allows. But they were somewhat reluctant to do that based on this idea of the new operational unpredictability. And so I did a piece, and Pentagon would say on background, an official said, yeah, the ship wasn't driven out by the Chinese, which was shadowed by a Chinese missile destroyer as well. But this is a very significant element. The Pentagon needs to not just do these operations in a legal sense, but they need to use information operations to state the reasons here that the UN International Permanent Court of Arbitration ruled that China's claims to the whole sea were illegal. That should be a key element of these naval operations.
Gordon Chang, earlier in the week, Bill Gertz talked about this, as I think you did in your column too, is a question of whether by describing these activities of ours as innocent passage rather than freedom of navigation operations, we're actually acceding to the Chinese claim to sovereignty. In any event, it seems to me the very nature of these operations, which is ephemeral, is totally inadequate to what our permanent presence and fortified facilities. And I think that's really a problem, especially, as you say, the strategic location of some of these.
Yeah, and as I've stated in my book, IWAR, we really need to develop much better information operations capabilities to be able to deal with these information conflicts and disputes. And we just don't have the capability. It's an urgent requirement. I hope the Trump administration will pick up some of the recommendations in my book for creating new institutions on the information front.
Yeah, it's not that we don't have the capabilities. I mean, heavens knows this is a country with considerable information operations capacity. It's just that we're not bringing it to bear in the national security interests. And your book is so important in that regard. Bill, finally, one of the other pieces that you touched on in your Inside the Ring column this week was the President's Intelligence Advisory Board, long known as the PIFIAB, President's Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board. There are some troubling names that are being floated as potential appointees to that board, which has an important oversight role for the president at a time when he's very anxious, and properly so, about the character of the deep state intelligence operations. Tell us what's happening there, Bill.
Yeah, this intelligence board is an important advisory group that advises the president on intelligence matters. And this is really important because so many times the current national security system is very unbalanced in the sense that the intelligence community, which thinks that it is accountable to very few people and likes to poke its eye and poke its finger in the eyes of policymakers, is basically needs a second opinion. And this board has been vacant for a year, and now they've picked a chairman and vice chairman, not named yet, but they're in the process of being vetted. And then they floated a number of names, which were fairly alarming, including that of former CIA analyst Mike Morrell, who was once an acting director. And he penned an op-ed last year which said, I ran the CIA, now I'm rooting for Hillary Clinton. And basically said that Donald Trump was a threat to national security. So it shows that the notion of bipartisanship is a little bit out of whack over there at the White House.
It's a one-way street as usual, I'm afraid. Bill, we have to leave it at that for the moment. Your work at the Washington Free Beacon and the Washington Times. Next up, we will speak with Bill Marshall of the superb Judicial Watch organization, a senior investigator about some of the fruits of his work and more right after this.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.